From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Monsoon rations may be able to move back to limited areas further south within the year. Regional health authorities are put on the lookout for New York's West Nile virus. And why Indonesia's troubles mean improved times for Grenada's nutmeg industry. I'm Debbie Ransom and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Montserrat's active volcano could be dying down enough to allow people to return to some southern areas next year. That's the word from the director of the Montserrat Volcano Observatory, Dr. Simon Young. Dr. Young is in Britain this week. He met with fellow scientists at the Royal Society in London to discuss the scientific lessons from the Soufrière Hills volcano. With the volcano relatively quiet over the last 3 months, I asked Dr. Young whether this is evidence that it is actually cooling down.
Very much so, yes. The lava dome stopped growing in March 1998. So we've had a year and a half without the lava dome growing, and the growth of the lava dome in the crater was the main source of the activity. So we felt that once the dome stopped growing, once we stopped getting new lava onto the surface, then things would slow down. They've only slowed down slowly, but we are now seeing the stabilization of the lava that's left in the crater, the reduction in gas levels associated with the volcano, so the gas coming out is less, and it's really the gas at the moment which is driving the small explosions and the small collapses that we're still having. So we are having them sporadically, but they are getting further apart and each collapse is getting a little bit smaller, so we're certainly on the way down from the peak, and we hope that it continues down to a background level at the volcano.
Are there any examples anywhere in the world where a volcano has taken this route, cooled down, and then we've had a resurgence, or does it usually head, it's a normal trend for it to continue cooling?
It's normally normal to continue cooling, but there are lava domes around the world which do show cyclic activity where they might be active for a couple of years and then go stable for a few years and then start up again. We don't think that the Montserrat is... There are certain differences between those sort of domes and the Montserrat case, but we are optimistic that and the chances I think are very good that the volcano will now go fully back to sleep, certainly in the short to medium term.
So what are the chances that areas south of Belem River, such as Cork Hill, Delvins, Richmond Hill, that they can be given the all clear to be reoccupied?
We're very nearly there, actually. There are a couple of key aspects. The main one really is the amount of ash that is in those areas. In terms of the risk from the volcano as it stands now, the risks have diminished substantially, the direct risks. So we think the threat from pyroclastic flows, from explosions, is very, very small, and small enough to consider it essentially safe from those phenomena. However, there is still some ash fall in those areas. And the other key thing is there's a lot of ash on the ground in those areas. And the health implications of people living in a very ash-rich environment have been researched quite considerably on Montserrat. There are dangers to health with certain levels of ash. And so I think those areas will require some cleaning up. And once that is done, then I hope in the next few months, if that happens, then those areas will be habitable again. But it does very much depend on how much ash is in those areas, and that is something we're studying quite closely.
So if all goes to plan, we could actually see people moving further south in Montserrat in early 2000?
I hope during 2000, that certainly Cork Hill is a key area. There's a lot of housing in there. The housing is in pretty good condition, really. It's only really had ash on it. And people are actually allowed in there at the moment during the daytime. And so people are cleaning up their own houses. And now it just means cleaning up the other areas, the roads, getting the services back in, the electricity and the gas, water. And during the next year, I should hope that we've moved very much forward and we should see those communities re-establishing themselves.
Dr. Simon Young of Montserrat's Volcano Observatory. The Caribbean has been put on alert for the possible introduction of the deadly West Nile virus. Four people have already died in New York, where the virus has infected 17 people. According to the acting director of the Caribbean Epidemiology Center, Dr. Merle Lewis, the virus could spread to Caribbean shores. Tony Fraser reports from Port of Spain.
It's the first time that the West Nile virus has been discovered in the Western Hemisphere. Dr. Lewis says it's endemic in parts of Africa and has also traveled to Europe and Asia. The main carriers of the virus are said to be birds, and it could have been brought to the West through a bird exchange program. But according to the epidemiologist, no one is certain how the virus got to New York. However, what is certain is that through bird migrations from North America into the Caribbean and South America, the virus can be introduced to the region. Dr. Lewis says the West Nile virus is transmitted from birds to human via mosquitoes, which feed on the body of a dead bird infected with the virus.
Birds are known to stop. They're not aeroplanes. They do stop, and therefore the potential for an infected bird. Now you can have a number of possibilities. Some birds may be infected and may actually succumb to the infection. Others may clear their infection and develop antibodies and be fine. But some of them, while they have the virus circulating, if they stop in our island, can be bitten by Culex mosquitoes and therefore begin a cycle in the Caribbean. But you do have the other possibilities, an infected traveler, who could be a person from the Caribbean, unfortunate to have gotten bitten in New York, could incubate, could come back and be bitten by a Culex in the Caribbean and start another cycle.
The symptoms of the virus are similar to dengue fever, and Dr. Lewis says the individual may not know the difference. But she says someone infected with the West Nile does not have to die, and that's why CARIC has written to ministries of health in all of its 21 member countries to have them on the lookout for the virus.
We don't want people to panic, and so certainly we've asked in our releases to the ministries to ask in physicians to use, besides their clinical judgment, to use epidemiologic data and evidence. You know, ask people then, you know, have you been in contact with birds? Do you live? Have you seen dead birds, etc.? So that they will focus in and not, you know, in other words, every fever and rash is not going to be West Nile virus. Every fever and rash is not dengue fever.
Dr. Lewis says CARIC has asked ministries of health to work closely with their wildlife specialists to get a sense of bird movements. The basic advice, however, remains eliminate the breeding grounds of the Culex mosquito, which carries the West Nile virus. Tony Fraser in Port of Spain for BBC Caribbean Report.
Caribbean countries are going to have to outdo developing nations in the financial sector if they're to stay in the running. That's the advice from St. Vincent and the Grenadines ambassador to the United States, Kingsley Lane. He says that recent reports criticizing some aspects of offshore banking need to be taken on board by Caribbean countries, whether they like it or not. I spoke to Ambassador Lane during a visit to our London studio.
We see a number of arguments being made about our attempts to get into non-traditional areas like offshore banking. In the case of my own country, we were very meticulous in the legislation that we put in place. Other countries have been doing their best, but they're always finding loopholes. They do, it's going difficult because offshore banking, the offshore financial sector, is big money. And unfortunately, it has had a history in some cases where it has been used. Right now in the United States, there is a big inquiry into certain Russian sources laundering money to reputable U.S. banks. You know, we try, as we are starting out in this era, to be very meticulous about our rules. But we have to be careful that we do not make it impossible to do business with us. In St. Vincent and the Grenadines' case, we run a ship registry business, and we have always cooperated with the international community. You know, very much, very often I have had to, in the case of United States or even the United Nations up to 1994, I have had to intervene to to ensure that people know that St. Vincent and the Grenadines upholds its commitment to the international community in that regard.
The latest OECD report is not favourable to the Caribbean. Yeah. Is there a sense of developed countries very much trying to put, as you say, these attempts at a new form of economic development in its place in developing countries?
Well, this is view is widely held, that the developed countries do not want us to share in the fruits of development in terms of handling money that is generated to the globalised economy.
So what can Caribbean countries do to prove their case and stay in the race?
Well, as I said, we are first starting off from a point of departure where our legislature, the basis of our legislation, is as modern as there is in the world today. We spent a lot of money getting some of the best brains to help us to craft our legislation. All of us are doing that because we know that the hurdle for entry is being lifted every day. And there's a genuine feeling, well expressed by a colleague of mine, the ambassador of Antigua, that the developed world do not want to have these little countries playing with big money.
So you're saying that smaller countries have to be holier than thou to survive.
Precisely.
In that whole financial
world. It has always
been
the case for us. We have to be twice as good in order to survive sometimes.
The Dean of the Caribbean Diplomatic Corps in Washington, Ambassador Kingsley Lane. The unrest in Indonesia is actually providing financial good news for Grenada. On the Spice Isle, nutmeg producers and exporters have had a bumper crop. With Indonesia, the world's biggest exporter of nutmeg, facing its current political unrest, Grenada's nutmeg industry is making the most of the situation. Lou Smith reports from St. George's.
The social and political problems in Indonesia have led to greater demand on the world market for nutmegs, leaving the Grenadian nutmeg producers to aim to cash in on a windfall. Indonesia and Grenada are the biggest producers and exporters of nutmegs, with the Indonesians supplying two-thirds of the world market. Byron Campbell, chairman of the Grenada Cooperative Nutmeg Association, the board that handles nutmeg exports from Grenada, says the country is in a position to capitalize on the shortages because of a bumper crop last season, which spells more money for the growers of Grenada's dark gold nutmegs.
We find that it's an opportunity for us to look at the quality of our asset, that is to do the necessary renovations and improvement of the asset. We think it's important to look at how we do in business, the whole process flow or manufacturing process, how to look at this a second time. And to also, thirdly, Lou, to improve the whole management, quality of management that exists in the GCNA. So we are looking at doing business differently. But yes, the problems in Indonesia had meant that Grenada in the past year has received much better prices on the world market for its nutmegs.
Grenada has been averaging an annual 2,300 metric ton production for about $20 million EC or more. And Mr. Campbell, while not giving figures, says the industry performed better last year. However, the same cannot be said for next year, even though Mr. Campbell is hoping prices would stabilize on the world market.
The bubble wouldn't bust per se, but we think that it will drop somewhat. We will not experience, it would not continue to grow, so to speak, or to increase. We think that there must be some reason in the market that it would stabilize, and we cannot be greedy, so to speak, exploited to the fullest, but to be reasonable. Because, you see, the problem there is that if you go too far, you can find that some users will say, well, do I really need this product in my formula? And therefore, one has to be very conscious of what is reasonable and what the market could take.
One of the reasons for the projected drop in production for next year, Mr. Campbell says, is that the nutmeg trees need time to, as he put it, recover following last year's bumper crop, one of the country's best. Grenada still ships its nutmegs whole grain in bags. But for added value, it has now started distilling nutmeg oil from the unsold nutmegs. One of the things the local industry is hoping to achieve is to actually grind the nutmegs here in Grenada. The association is also looking to get away from selling nutmegs through the middleman and to go directly to the main users of the product. But then, the GCNA chairman said, a high quality must always be maintained. And with the year drawing to a close, Grenada's 8,000 nutmeg producers can expect the usual bonus, which Mr. Campbell predicts will be substantially higher than last year's $5 million payout. For BBC Caribbean Report, I am Lou Smith in St. George's.
And that's it for this evening edition of BBC Caribbean Report. More news at 11.05, 11.15 and 12.10 GMT tomorrow morning. I'm Debbie Ransom, saying goodbye from London.